I think we had come a very long way from the simple interactivity of press button and play. Mm-hmm. I would like to discuss mainly here how you make the space that you control by the code and with the sensors, how do you make it alive? So let us go to different levels of what you actually do and how you construct your spaces.
Yeah, I guess the kind of story you want to tell, what you want the space to be like, how you want it to behave, but then also between what is possible with technology or how you can actually make it work. What do we want the space to be like? What kind of concept is behind it? It goes beyond push here, this happens. How can I think about like longer timescales of behavior? How can I give the space memory? How do I then map these things to output media? And how will that then influence again the also how people then again behave in the space? It can be a feedback loop where, I don't know, there's a light sensor which triggers a light to go on, which triggers something else. How can that make sense altogether?
So in your texts, when you try to describe the complex ways of reaction and then storing the data and how do you manipulate it later on, you mention a lot of times rehearsals, meaning that especially in the last few projects that you've been working on for several mm-hmm. years now, you've worked firstly in a team of people, mm-hmm. lots of times not only yeah. on installations, which would be experiential, but mm-hmm. also on dance performances, on mm-hmm. theatre performances. Yeah. What do you actually do in these rehearsals? How important it is for you to develop your work?
I mean, there's different kinds of rehearsals. Like in the beginning, the start of the project, they're more exploratory, and it's about trying out different concepts you have. For example, with Michael Schumacher, the dancer, we did a lot of work just him wearing sensors, making different movements, and just looking at the data and trying out mapping it to different sounds. But then, of course, as you get closer to making the piece or finishing the piece, well, it's never really finished, I think, but it's more, I guess, in a kind of traditional rehearsal. There's always a little tension between how much do you script, how much is like set, and how much room is there for sort of the improvisation elements and the interactive elements. And that's also where I think there is the tension, because sort of in the classical theater rehearsals, there's a script and you know you can do this scene again and again and again. But the moment you have a system that lives by itself, then it's not so easy to say, like, go back to scene one, because the system will have built up history. Or you can't just say, like, oh, well, we're just going to do the end, because then you miss the whole beginning part, and the sort of energy in the system is not there yet. Then. Yeah, for interactive systems, it can be quite hard to sort of adjust to those kind of situations.
And in that kind of piece, there's a lot of improvisation, not from only from the part of the performance, but what you mention, a term life coding, meaning mm-hmm. that you code the system and adjust it. And it's not only to serve as a correction or a backup plan if the system goes wrong, as we are used to mm-hmm. many times on such mm-hmm. occasions, but it's also to purposefully make it more live.
Mm-hmm. The live coding or code as interface, I mean, during rehearsals, I find it very useful as a skill to just being able to very quickly change interactions between the sensors and the sound. But during the performance, there's always elements which will change, like the sensors might be a bit more responsive, the dancer might move differently. Especially with Schwelle, there were a lot of times where I was also just looking at the dancer and based on that, determining like how I would make the sensors maybe more sensitive or gradually make more sensitive, while at the same time, of course, listening to what the output was. So that
you come from basically music or sound background. Not only did you study programming and physics, but also sound art. So this two parts of your interest in education have been developing parallelly, so you are not here from position of a scientist who turned to be artist or an artist who turned to be a scientist, which is usually the case, but
I guess I was, in a way, also a bit at a loss, because I could go in any direction. But I, yeah, specifically chose then to study physics, because I was interested in sound. Actually, at the time, I didn't know about, like, electronic music courses on the conservatory or something, so I didn't want to go sort of the classical music education way. So I specifically ended up looking for a physics department that had a good specialization in sound and acoustics. So then, as I was finishing this degree, I heard about this electronic music course at the conservatory in The Hague, and thought, oh great, that's what I want to do. So then I signed up for that for 1 year. And then basically after that, I moved to Berlin and sort of combined the two things. And at the same time, did a lot of performances in Berlin with a lot of my homemade electronics and sort of the synthesizer. And at some point, I bought a laptop and started using that more.
Your most recent and maybe most in-depth research was done in the past 3 years in Montreal, where you had a postdoc at a university.
My main occupation was doing this research, which was a project between Concordia University and McGill University with my collaborator Chris Salter. The main purpose of this research project was to develop infrastructure for interactive environments. And initially, we hoped to use some wireless sensing off the shelf, but we couldn't find any. So we created a sensing board based on Arduino and XWE that had the requirements that we needed, and at the same time developed this data sharing infrastructure to make it really easy to share data coming either from sensors or from other things between different interactive media software like SuperClimber, Pure Data, MaxMSP, Processing, or C++ or Python. And we tested these things not only in our own work, but also in a couple of workshops with students from different universities. That has proven quite successful as a platform.
Tools that you have developed in this past 3 years, also for the workshop that is going on in Kapelica, it's going to result in some sort of, let's say, a test version of sensitive space. Mm-hmm. When you started to speak about a certain case of trying to make sensors more sensitive to your dancer, for example, in the space, there's a certain system that you mentioned, I'm not very familiar with it, that would calculate the average of all the information. So if this information would be very subtle, you would amplify it in a way that it would prove to be more various. And for us to understand how interactive space works is sometimes for an observer quite mystical, in a sense. How do you communicate your spaces with the audience and that?
Yeah, I mean, that's always a very hard question. If it's like a public environment where the public interacts, people are very familiar with sort of the direct interaction. Sort of longer timescale interactions have been less often applied or are not so often used. And yeah, sort of the readability of that is, of course, also still complex. I mean, it's quite easy to make it too hard to read, or it's also quite easy to make it too easy to read, and you sort of have to go somewhere in the middle where it's interesting enough to stay long enough to figure out, sort of to get an understanding of it. And sort of the other case where it's a performer on stage doing the interactive stuff, there the problem is that a well-made piece by itself without any sort of interactive technology, there is already often a strong correlation, because dancers are very trained and timed to do things at a specific time. The people behind the desks who are doing the cues are very trained to perform cues at the right times. So there you already get a lot of synchronicity going on. In that sense, it is kind of hard to make sense of this interaction. I mean, the easiest solution would be if people go to the same performance twice, then they will see that there's differences. But you don't often have the time for that, or the money, or both. And there's of course different ways to do that. You can sort of introduce different things, like as part of the development, and then over the course of the piece sort of change them around so people get aware of it. But yeah, it's a difficult question.
Maybe it's connected to what you have said at the very start, that you have to have a very good idea of what you want to do with your system in order to apply it. So when you speak about that and constructing a certain idea, and also in this workshop, there has been a certain idea behind what you want to do and why and what the effect is going to be. Do you use a sort of a narrative line through which you would project what you want to do, or is it mainly just sensual, experiential thing?
Well, it depends on the work. For example, with the Schwelle dance performance, there was a script and there was a concept of what the dancer was and what the space was and what we tried to achieve with that. I mean, I've also done projects where, I don't know, I took sort of the opposite approach, where I just looked in all my boxes with electronics and was like, okay, what can I use of this? Sort of the harvesting unused stuff from different projects and making something new out of it, while going sort of come up with a project out of that, and then coming with the story of what these things actually are and mean.
In one of your installations, you've used a certain kind of tactility, so that might be a very sensual experience in one sense, but maybe there's a story behind it as well, because you used some sort of sounds and replication of sounds.
This piece just noticeable difference. Basically, what happens is you go into this dark box and lie down on a platform, and that piece is like so much about how the body feels, also sort of how, because of your being in a dark space, how that affects like how you, what you think or are experiencing overall. It was a very hard piece to make, because sort of vibrations of the body are not something you're used to sort of, in one sense, also pay attention to, but also sort of compose with it, like, and then compose with it and experience it. And it's also not something you can just do the whole time, because after you've done it 3-4 times, your body just feels totally different. And I also had, during the process of making that, there were a lot of different, like, sometimes I would go in and just sort of try and test, like, okay, is this working technically? Like, are the kinds of things that I told the system to do happening? But then there's the other way of experiencing the piece, like, how does it make my body feel? Like, how does it make sense? And those are different ways of paying attention to what's going on.
It seems like that in this piece that you're trying to explore, I know for a fact that you used some sounds, but I don't know whether the vibration was produced by sound. And basically, I think what would a piece like that, as so tactile and oriented towards the body, tell us that the octocentric view of the world is not the only possible, and that we are very sensual people on different levels of the sensory systems, right?
I mean, sounds are vibrations, so it's actually quite hard to separate them. And the technology we used to create the vibrations are special speakers. They're made for people who want to enhance their home theater experience. So you have these speakers that you can mount underneath your couch, I think, or platform on which you have your couch, and wherever fancy your home theater is. And they can create sort of this low vibration. So if you watch some spectacular Hollywood movie, you can feel the explosions or something. We then used them to create these vibrations in this platform, but they can also produce an audible sound. Just by sending different signals to these speakers, we were able to both use them for the vibrations and for the sound. But at the same time, certain vibrations would also be audible. So we had to find a balance between the kinds of effects, because something might feel great as in a vibrational sense, but they might just sound awful and break the experience.
Or vice versa.
Well, vice versa, actually less, because the kinds of sounds we used were actually quite soft, so you wouldn't be able to hear them. And a lot of the sound, like really sound things in there, I try to tune at a level where you actually have to strain to hear them. So it's in that, and then it becomes this very active kind of hearing, which in everyday life you hardly have because there's so much sound around us.
So did you need a special, very sound-isolated space to produce this work?
The box we made has like sound insulation in the walls. The walls are about 30 centimeters thick, which dampens a lot of the sound, not all, but it really makes the space feel, yeah, a lot larger than it is.
What seems to be quite important in your work is how you use either some accessible technology that you use it for an aesthetic experience, or you develop your own tools, which are usually for professional reasons, for example, healthcare or whatever other reason. They would be very expensive, but you make them more accessible. And in that sense, I view your work also with these workshops as a sort of a political statement. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, there is definitely a sense of democratizing the technology going on there. Because a lot of these wireless systems are made for health monitoring or military purposes or closed systems with very specific applications. Yeah, sort of making them accessible for artists to use will probably give us a lot of more interesting things that could be done with them, and also allow people to actually go and understand what this technology is and does. I mean, I'm also mainly using open source software, I guess for kind of the same reasons, sort of cyberpunk, post-apocalyptic views of the world where you could wonder what would happen if at the moment there's no more oil, we won't be able to actually fabricate a lot of the things we depend on. It's not just fuel that oil is used for, but it's in most of our laptops are basically oil. It will only be the people who can actually go in and repair these things or change them around who will be able to still make use of these things. Yeah.
One of the possible critiques of the way programs are developed specifically for art context is, for example, their speciality and unflexibility towards applying this program for other purposes, for example.
I mean, one of the things that was very important for us with these wireless boards was to make them open for different kinds of sensing, different kinds of actuating things, to make them programmable. So if you want to do something different that we didn't anticipate, that you can do those things. There are other wireless solutions, but they're very specific to measuring certain things, or you can't like change like what they do. So programmability was quite important for us. You could easily use the same thing for home automation things, or because it is so open and you can program how things behave.
Any sort of automation in daily life.
Yeah.
Now, for the last bit, I'm interested of what will be the result of the workshop that has been going on since Saturday 26th, I think, till Friday the 4th.
Yeah. Basically, the workshop we started with just introduction into the technology and of the different participants who did not know each other at all, like some did, but not others and stuff. Then we've just started to brainstorm, okay, what can we do within this week in this space to make some kind of project with this technology. There was one concept to think about, the fairy tale The Emperor's New Clothes, as a kind of metaphor, possibly also a criticism on interactive media. And then we've come up with different sort of sub-projects which sort of play into this theme or have their own little theme. We've prepared the different sensing things. We've already set up some of the sort of the media infrastructure, focusing lights at specific spots. People have been looking for images that we want to project, or working on sound material that we want to use, or just sort of learning some of these programming languages to work with.